if you're innovating, creating, or making a difference.
This show is for you. Welcome to Over Coffee. I'm Dot Cannon. Here on Over Coffee, we talk with artists and innovators about the process of changing the world in terms of what they do.
The ideas with makers making changes, like some people, I need this, or I want this, or I made this. But what we're hoping to do is look at some of these things, make a few of them, pilot them with people with disabilities, and get them kind of to review it.
What if you could make something that made someone's life a little bit easier? That's exactly what Chad Lehman is helping makers do. Chad is the Director of Development for the Neil Squire Society, the only national nonprofit organization in Canada that researches, develops, and uses assistive technology to empower people with disabilities. And he's also the co-founder of a relatively new initiative called Makers Making Change. And what Makers Making Change does is connect makers in Canada and now in the U.S. to people with disabilities to collaborate on developing new assistive technology solutions. Chad, before we get to talking about the Neil Squire Society and the incredibly cool stuff you're doing with Makers Making Change, I'd like to know a little bit about you. How did you first realize the power of technology for social good?
Oh, that's a great question. It's an area that I've been involved with more and more as my career has kind of progressed. But I got started, I was not a very good university student, and I was in computer science and not really enjoying it very much and doing some English classes along the way. And I got this amazing opportunity to work a summer job at the Neil Squire Society. They have a program called Computer Comfort, and it's where someone with a disability can come in and learn basic computer skills. And we still run this. I was working on this program. I'm going to date myself here, but it was early 2000s. I was getting close to being finished university. But for me, when I was doing this computer science thing, and I was kind of thinking, I don't know if I want to spend the rest of my life in a cubicle punching code. So to kind of take some of my computer literacy skills and help teach people, get them set up with their first email account or how to do a Google search, and just kind of be able to use my tech skills to kind of help people, kind of it was pretty powerful stuff to kind of realize that, my technical skills didn't necessarily have to be feeding a technical beast, but could actually really help empower more marginalized people of our community. So that's how I kind of got started, and then the job came out to run the computer tutoring program shortly after I graduated university, so I took that over and have done a lot of work in sort of growing that and a computer flourishing program and e-learning stuff, which now led on to this most recent sort of work. So the joys of working in a nonprofit is typically you have a lot of creative freedom and a lot of opportunity to really take the ball and run with it. And that's certainly the opportunity I've had here at Neil Squire Society, and it's really grown to amazing things for both me and the organization.
And as it's grown, you came up with an exciting initiative that is celebrating, if I'm not mistaken, just had its one-year anniversary, the Makers Making Change.
Yeah, 1 year might not quite be there yet in terms of timelines, but just over a year ago, we were the recipient of a Google.org Impact Challenge. So Google had this Impact Challenge as sort of like a contest, and the idea was what sort of technology innovation could change the world for people with disabilities. Now, the Neil Squire Society, and I might tell a little bit of Neil's story here because I think it actually really leads well into the work we're doing today. So Neil Squire Society is named after a man named Neil Squire. He was a university student, and he got into a fairly significant car accident where he broke his neck at the C1, C2 level. So that's right at the base of your skull. If people are trying to picture it, think Christopher Reeve's level sort of disability. So he survived the accident, this is the early 80s, but couldn't move his legs, couldn't move his arms. His tongue, he had a difficult time moving. He could speak well sometimes, but not other times. He had backup in his lungs with fluid. He was using tracheotomy to breathe. So he had a very difficult time speaking and being understood. So here you have this bright, young, smart man, used to play on the university basketball team, literally now trapped in his body, staring at the ceiling in a hospital. So a cousin of his, a second cousin, Bill Cameron, who was an engineer, worked with a couple summer students, and they invented a system for Neil where he could sip and puff on a straw, and they connected that to a Morse code machine. So sips and puffs became dots and dashes. They translated those dots and dashes by connecting it into, at that time, a state-of-the-art Apple IIe computer, one of the first sort of personal computers. So Neil could sip and puff on this tube and literally type on the screen, "I'm thirsty, kind of get a cup of water," or "can change the channel." Really gave him the ability to communicate. And there's another number of other people at the rehab hospital and need other accommodations. So that's really how we got started as an organization. Now, that system Neil used evolved over time when the mouse cursor came in, right? Sipping and popping on a straw to type was okay, but you needed this mouse emulation. So they kind of packaged up that whole system, and they made it so it's basically a mouse that uses your mouse. And the product's called the Jouse, and you can still buy the Jouse today. But the problems with the Jouse right now is it's a big unit. It has a separate control box, which is also quite large, and it needs to be powered by being plugged into your wall. So it doesn't really solve access problems for how a lot of us are using computers these days, which is mobile computers, right? Your smartphones, your tablets. So it's a bit of a long backstory, but what we propose to Google is take the sort of early work we've done with Neil or the Jouse, and let's re-envision this work in two ways. One, let's make a mouse-operated input that'll work not only on your computers and your laptops, but on your smartphones, your tablets, and whatnot. And let's make it small, let's make it lightweight so it can be mounted to a wheelchair. It doesn't need to be plugged into a wall. And then the other part, which I think is really important, and it's kind of led into our makers making change work, was let's not make it another medical device that costs $2,000 or $3,000. Let's release it open source. So you can go to our website right now. You can see here's all the components that we buy to make it. Here's the instructions to build it. Here's the 3D printed files for the shell and the joystick. Here's the code for the Arduino board. So the model to get this into people's lives is not to be a medical product that is sold, but more an engagement model. It's really trying to connect makers in their community to people with disabilities and build them at the local community level. And we're now heavily in that stage of trying to set up events where these are built at the community level.
Speaking of which, we are talking in California today. You're located in Canada, but you've just done your first U.S. event, I believe?
Yeah, we've done three now. Our first two on the same day, one in Seattle and one in Philadelphia, both on Father's Day, actually, as part of the National Week of Making under the Nation of Makers. So that was really cool because we've done a number in Canada, but all of them was like, oh, we forgot something. Let me just run back to the office and grab it, right? You know, being in Philadelphia, literally on the other side of the continent, you know, it takes a little more planning stuff. But yeah, we've done three now in the States. We have a fourth coming up in the Washington State area pretty soon, and the month, I believe. But yeah, now we're starting to really try to make like a kit so people can do this at the community level to build these different devices.
Let's be sure before we go on to give the information about where people can find your open source software, where they can get a little bit more information about that kit.
Yeah, so if you went to makersmakingchange.com. Right now, it's mostly just a landing page. We're working on the web development and just trying to grow this initiative a bit. But you'll see right now there's a featured build which talks about the lip sync, and you can click through there and see the list of the parts, the components, the 3D printed files, everything anyone would need to do it. There's some parts that we supply from our office just because, like I said, having people print their own PCB boards, we'll mail them the PCB boards and a couple other small components that just have large minimum orders. Like, maybe you don't need the 200 springs, which are the minimum order. You need six, so we'll send you eight in case you lose one. But, you know, so there's a few things that we're buying for people, but by and large, people can kind of make one independently from the parts that they have.
That is awesome. What has been one of your best experiences with making and testing the lip sync?
There's a couple of things that kind of really come to mind, and the people that get involved, and on both sides. So, like, we're a disability service organization, the Neil Squire Society. We serve over 2,000 people a year across Canada. So we know the impact that technology can have for people with disabilities. But, you know, Don, who's on our board of directors, Don Danbrook, he's a high-level quadriplegic. He uses a Jouse on his computer along with Dragon Naturally Speaking. And he's worked for like 30 years. You know, he worked for the government as collecting taxes. He's worked in property management. He owns land properties. Like, he's a very smart, very capable guy. He's done very well for himself. But technology has allowed him to be independent. But you see him trying to make a call on his phone, and he's having an assistant dial the phone number and holding it to his ear. Or, you know, can you type this in my text to me? So, like, he's so independent when he's using his desktop computer, and he has none of that independence or privacy in using his mobile device. So just to kind of level the playing field for a number of these people, it's very, very powerful. And there's a number of stories like that where people that have, you know, they've worked, they've had this injury, you know, they're refiguring out their whole life, and they just get some of the independence back to do things independently. It's really powerful. Omar is a local guy that we've been working with. He immigrated from Iraq. He was injured in the bombings as a young man. And so he's come to BC, and he just finished writing his GED requirements, and he wrote that final exam using the lip sync. So he was able to do it independently. So he didn't have someone writing the notes for him. Like, he was able to do that test independently, and he's now been accepted into our local Institute of Technology and the Art and Design School. So he has a choice of where he's going to go to school to pursue more of a technical side or an art side. So just giving people the tools to be empowered has been really powerful. But also, and this wasn't something I expected as much, but for the people that volunteer their time, the makers that are doing it, is really powerful for them. I mean, I remember when I was a student, you know, you'd work really hard on a paper, you put a ton of time and effort, you get it back, you get a B, and it goes into the bin. And that's the end of it. So for engineering students or makers in their community, to kind of take their different skills and spend a day and build it for someone is really powerful for people. Like, it's really transformative, like, to know that all these sort of skills that they've been building in school, they've used for, you know, beer can picking up robots or flashing LED boards, to make something that really changes someone's life is just as powerful as the person that actually does that build. So it's a really fantastic people to kind of do, you know, some skilled philanthropy, really take their knowledge and their tinkering ability and change someone's life.
Am I understanding that the lip sync, when Don uses it, is going to dial his phone for him as well as allow him to use his desktop computer?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it allows to do anything you want on the phone, right? It basically, it emulates a mouse. So it's basically a mouse that you use in your mouth. So when you think of your Bluetooth or plug it into your phone, a mouse cursor appears on the screen. And then by moving that joystick up, down, left, right, it moves the mouse cursor. And then you can puff to tap, sip to go back, you know, do a longer puff, kind of put in a scroll mode, kind of flick down pages. So it basically allows someone to do anything on their phone that you and I do, whether that's make a phone call, send a text, take a selfie and put it to Instagram. Like, you know, just allow someone to use the phone just as you or I would.
I'm foreseeing it allowing somebody to waste a ton of time now surfing the net online or doing crossword puzzles like I like to do as a guilty pleasure.
Yeah, but I mean, for some people, like, it depends. Everyone's situation is different, right? But for some people with significant disabilities that are, you know, maybe don't have a lot of family around and they're like a long-term care facility, it's a lot of, like, sit around waiting in bed, you know, someone puts a TV on a certain channel for you. So just at least to have, you know, a mobile device that you can control allows you to explore your own interests and at least have that sort of personal part of you, like, control what you do with your time a little bit instead of waiting for a nurse aide to come in and do something for you, right? Give someone, even that little bit of independence can be hugely empowering for someone that, you know, has a significant disability, maybe not a lot of freedom.
I'm hearing it's the difference between living and existing. This is exciting stuff. What would you like to do in the future with the lip sync? How are you going to be changing it and modifying it?
Yeah, there's some, what we found as we started working this lip sync area and we started mapping out different maker spaces and different pieces, we found that there's these other sort of communities of people doing it. Hackaday has sort of hacking contest that goes on, the category of assistive technologies. Thingiverse had an assistive technology piece. So I started looking at, like, are there other sort of things that can be made? Like, the lip sync is a bit of a complicated sort of project. Not so much now to build, but in terms of, like, design and getting it to this point, right? There's 3D printing involved. There's, you know, food safe issues because it's going to someone's mouth. And there's programming a microcomputer. So it's a bit of an embedded thing. There are other sort of things that can be done that would empower people with disabilities that are simpler. You know what I mean? Like, very simple sort of things. And we've been prototyping some of those things, like, we, you know, just simple 3D prints. An example of this is, like, some writing aids. So my boss, Dr. Gary Birch, is a C6, C7 quadriplegic. So what that means is, that's the level of his break. He can move his arms, but not his fingers. So, I mean, he's a doctor in electrical engineering. He's incredibly smart. But picking up a pen, very difficult. Or picking up a toothbrush, it's hard. So what he has is, like, these splints that kind of, you can slide his hand into the side and then basically has, like, a pipe hole on the side of it where a pen can go in or a toothbrush or a fork or a spoon. So he uses that. Now, he has one that was designed at a rehab hospital in L.A., and he's had it for, like, 30 years. But not everyone has the opportunity to go to these state-of-the-art rehab hospitals in Los Angeles. So we basically took his splint design, modeled in a 3D printing software, and we can now 3D print this. So it's a really easy, cheap thing that can be done. And again, it's open, right? So you can make it skinnier, you can make it wider, put your name or your favorite sports team logo on it. You can customize it to the person. So we kind of use the lip sync, kind of help open us up to this new sort of idea of how we can kind of leverage emerging technologies like 3D printing and microcontrollers to really create lower cost and more customized solutions for people with disabilities.
I was looking online at some of the different technologies you were displaying at the Maker Faire, and I love that, and I love the magnetic shoelaces you came up with.
Yeah, the magnetic shoelaces aren't us, but it's definitely something that we'll help promote. That's a big idea with the makers making change, is that not every innovation that's going to help some disabilities by using a 3D printer or Arduino board is going to come by it from us. And that's fine. What we want to do is really shine a light on some things that are happening and help them scale a little bit. So the ideas with makers making changes, you know, there's going to be projects kind of come in at different sort of stages, right? Like there's going to be people, you know, I need this or I want this or I made this. What we're hoping to do is look at some of these things, make a few of them, pilot them with people with disabilities and with disability professionals like occupational therapists and assistive technology experts, and get them kind of to review it. We want the people that use it and the people that recommend it to be the ones that kind of say, this is actually a really good solution. From those things, we really want to shine a light on them and try to build almost like a matchmaking service, kind of similar to like a dating service, but instead of trying to find your date for Saturday night, find, you know, a person with disability or, you know, an occupational therapist or disability professional can connect to a makerspace in their community and have one of these, quote-unquote, trusted sort of products built for them. And we think outside of, like, the things that we really say, like, okay, the LipSync is ready to go. We've had it reviewed. It's helping our people build that. We think also connecting makers to people with disabilities is going to be lots of innovation that happens around, you know, making custom things for that one person. But we're just hoping those get fed back into the site because quite often I've seen there's a great, brilliant idea that happens once for this person in this community, and that's where it stays. And that idea can probably apply to other communities if other people are facing the same barriers. So we're really trying to create kind of like a Thingiverse, but sort of a trusted site really focused on people with disabilities and connecting them to makers in their community around projects that we believe we can really help empower their independence.
A lot of our listeners are makers here in the U.S. Can they contact you through that website?
Yeah, there's a sign-up form right now on makersmakingchange.com. I'm hoping that by the end of summer, we're in the middle of web development right now, it'll be, I'm careful using the word, a social networking site. But something like that, something like set up an account, say, like, I'm in, let's say, Oakland, I have a 3D printer, I'm willing to help. They can kind of find those skills and look at different people in their community that need help with building things. Right now, it's a lot of Chad with big maps and spreadsheets on his wall trying to map it all out. So the idea is, like, this fancy internet thing can maybe help me do some of the matchmaking stuff if people choose to disclose the location, the skills they're willing to volunteer.
Let's issue a challenge to our listeners right now, because a lot of them are makers. What's a technology that you don't have yet that you would really love to see a maker come up with that would help and empower someone with a disability?
Good question. I mean, there's a lot of people at different community levels, and I could definitely go through the spreadsheet. If anyone at the certain community is interested, I could, you know, help connect them to someone at their level. I think that local piece is really important, because when you can look at someone in their eye and see what they're doing, and I've seen other sort of maker projects around disability that haven't had that. There was a group that was doing 3D printed prosthetics, but someone to make the prosthetic, they ship it to the organization, and the organization would try to place it with somebody. And that's flawed for a couple of reasons in my idea. One is, you don't just stick a prosthetic on someone's arm. Like, how it mounts to someone's arm, where the amputation is, the size of that, like, that's probably something you're going to go through a few iterations. And you lose that personal connection. You know, like, someone will make this prosthetic hand, they ship it off, but they don't know who got it, or if it worked, or how it helped them. So, like, you don't have that sort of, like, validation of your work. But one person that's kind of coming to mind that we're working with right now is Jared. And, I mean, this would be, you know, disability problems and barriers come on a continuum. Jared is someone that is on the far end of a difficulty, sort of a continuum. He has very advanced stages multiple sclerosis. So he has a very difficult time speaking, kind of like how Neil is. So the way a lot of people end up communicating with him right now is they spell things out. So let's say you were Jared. The person that wanted to communicate with Jared would say, okay, first letter, A to M or N to Z. And say it was N to Z, he would lift his eyebrow. When you say N to Z, that's the one sort of facial feature he still has full control over. So he lifts his eyebrow. So N to Z. So the person will go, okay, N, O, P, Q, R, S, T. They lift their eyebrow. Okay, first letter's T, and they write it down. So this communication method leaves Jared totally unable to communicate unless someone is willing to do that with him. He has, like, no way to, like, express something, or someone's walking by, like, hey, can I get a cup of water, or I'm sore, can you help move me, or whatever. Like, he has to be very receptive. And he's in a long-term care facility where, you know, it's like two nurses per ward or like 40 people. Like, there's not that time to kind of do that with him in the way. So what I would like to see for Jared is I think that could probably be automated with a proper setup, right? It could probably be done better, but even that very simple sort of thing, you know, those letters could be read out to him. And if there's facial tracking where, like, it kind of detects an eyebrow switch And I've seen something like this. There's something called Supbrow, where someone like lifts an eyebrow and it texts sup to somebody. So like someone has figured out like how to make an eyebrow make a machine do something, right? But instead of kind of a joke sending sup to your buddy, if that was like the click yes, so he could build sentences and read it out, I think that'd be very powerful along the way. So there's like a high-end sort of challenge, right? You know, read out alphabet, detect the sort of switch-based input based on an eyebrow lift. That would be like the heavyweight champion of the world sort of maker challenge along the way. But Jared's in his room, and Jared needs help.
Challenge issued. Let's see what we can do here. And if anybody has anything that works with a sensor or anything of that nature, they can get in touch with you.
Yeah, and I mean, that's what we want to do with the Makers Making Change site, is have different projects there. Because we want to really try to help ones that are ready to scale, but we also recognize that some of the fun is figuring out the problem. And there's lots of problems, right? So to have something like Jared's story, and people can volunteer around that and share and collaborate with people, right, along the way. Where it's like, well, you know, I can figure out the whole speech alphabet sort of piece, and okay, I got this sort of text thing. So people can collaborate, come together, meet new people to make the world a slightly better place.
That really is what it's all about with the technology and the maker culture. What about where you would like to be in another year? If I interview you 1 year from today, what would you like to be able to tell me that Makers Making Change is doing in July of 2018?
That's a good question. So we did an event in January of 2017, this year, called the Access Makeathon. So it was like a hackathon, but instead of being four or five people sitting around a computer trying to make some like code innovation, they sat around a person with a disability and worked with them on a challenge that they brought. And they were kind of all over the map, the challenges. They're very individualized to the person, but there was a lot of solutions. I thought, you know, maybe we get some prototype, but there were a lot of solutions that were working by the end of the event. We made a custom Wiimote for a young man who had limited finger dexterities to allow him to play Lego Star Wars and be a Darth Vader like the rest of us. There was a quadriplegic that we made a sip and puff alarm system for because his wife is hard of hearing, so he was able to blow in a tube and wake up his wife that had like a vibrating frisbee underneath her pillow. So I'm hoping to do a number of those events across Canada. I've got some funding for the Government of Canada to do that. But I would like in my ideal utopian world, that in any community where someone needs a lip sync or some of these other devices that we've kind of done some testing on, that they can connect to a makerspace in their community and get help with that. So that would be my goal, that you know, people with disabilities and disability organizations are aware that there's this amazing maker culture of people that are building things at the community level, and that perhaps solutions don't need to be, you know, a $4,000 referred device, that it can be literally people can make something that works better and works custom for that person and be done in their community.
I'll check back with you, if I may, in a year and see where we are.
We'll see if I have any hair left, but that's the plan.
Sounds like a nonprofit worker to me. Makers Making Change is planning another stateside build-a-thon this fall. The date hasn't yet been set, but it is going to be early autumn, Chad says, and it's going to be happening in Tacoma, Washington, with the goal of getting maker skills on the curricula at more schools. We'll keep you posted when that date becomes definite. You can also check the website makersmakingchange.com.
Otherwise, we're having some more throughout BC and Alberta over the next coming couple months. But if anyone's interested in hosting a lip-sync-specific build in their community, I'd be happy to help them. I'll cover the parts for the first five lip-syncs. Each lip-sync costs about $200 to $250 in parts, depending on how large your order size is, like a component from the digit keys and stuff of the world. But I'll cover the parts for the first five builds, and I think it's a pretty easy thing to fundraise at the local community level. Because, you know, a joust right now costs $1,500 American. That's like over $2,000 in Canadian money, right? The lip sync can be built for about $200. So it's easy to say, you know, for $2,000, instead of buying one device, we'll build 10 of these things for people, right? So, but if anyone's interested in hosting a lip sync build event, I'm certain that I can find someone in your community that needs a device and be happy to kind of connect them to you.
To contact you, would that be that form you mentioned before on makersmakingchange.com?
Yeah, or you can send me an email. It's chadl@makersmakingchange.com.
chadl@makersmakingchange.com.
Yeah, that all goes to my Neil Squire inbox there. So feel free to mention where you heard me. This is why I'm really excited about the website, because right now I'm getting lots of emails and I'm doing my best to keep on top of it. But I think in some ways, like, my vision for this is I get out of the way. It's like I cheerlead the community, but it's really not about me making stuff locally and sending it out. It's more about supporting people at the community level to do this for people in the community, just helping build those relationships from the maker sort of culture to the disability sort of community, and then getting out of the way and kind of helping with some support. But I think the real magic happens at that local level.
You need makers, you need funding. How else can people best support you as you make the magic happen?
Those would be my two big things off the top of my head. Yeah, funding at the local level to kind of help things going. And it's more just kind of cost of parts, really, for a lot of these things, right? Like, when you do bigger events, there's a bigger cost, like catering it for everybody and whatnot. But, yeah, people's time and energy in terms of putting things together is the most valuable resource.
And they can contact you once again through that website, makersmakingchange.com. Finally here, and Chad, thank you for your time. I understand that you're a dad of twins. What would you most like to teach your kids about innovation, creativity, and making a difference through your work?
No, that's a great question. You know, there was in Vancouver, so I spent a lot of May and June on the road, And some of it was family vacation in Florida, so like don't feel too bad for me, but I've been away from my family and my kids a lot. So we got back from Florida on a Friday night, that's where my mother-in-law is, and the Saturday, Sunday was the Vancouver Maker Faire. And so it was really cool for me because, I mean, you know, I've been going to, like, went to the New York one, I spoke to San Francisco one, I was speaking at all these smaller mini Maker Faires throughout Canada. So to just have my four-year-old twins come with me for a day and kind of, quote-unquote, drink the Kool-Aid, so to speak, of what I'm doing was just, it was really powerful. And we had a great day. You know, I let most of my staff run the booth for that day. It was not very much help on the booth, but, you know, my kids used the drill to make a little wooden speaker amplifier. We did the learn to solder thing together, kind of hand over hand. There was like a paint station. They have this cardboard city where there's all this cardboard, and you built like this little town area, and then at the end of the day, they let all the kids play Godzilla and just destroy it. My kids loved it, and we were leaving at the end of the day, and I didn't think, you know, I flew for like 14 hours with my kids the day before. I didn't think they'd last very long. They lasted the whole day, and, you know, my daughter said to me, you know, Daddy, no, it's nice. Maker Faire is really close to home. We can go every weekend. It's like, well, not every weekend, I'm afraid, right? But I have a membership at the local Hackspace, and I've taken her down there, and I took both my son and my daughter, and, you know, they got a laser cutter there, right? So I figured, okay, we'll cut something on the laser cutter, right? So what can we do? So my son's like, Batman logo. I'm like, all right, easy peasy, right? Batman logo is no problem, right? And then my daughter's like, I want Tracker from Paw Patrol, and I want him jumping in the air, and I want to say Tracker underneath that badge. I'm like, oh, man, I've created a monster, you know what I mean? She asked me, like, Dad, how would you make this glass? I'm like, well, I don't know. I guess we'll look it up on the computer, right? So she's definitely already, like, you know, her favorite thing to do is do a craft, so to speak, right? So she definitely likes the hands-on and building stuff, right? So it's definitely, they've enjoyed their slight touch points in the maker movement, but that's been the idea, right? Less consumers of cheap stuff, more makers of cool stuff, right?
Absolutely. Chad, thank you for your time today.
Dot, thank you so much for your time and for everyone for taking the time to listen. We're a Canadian charity who've been around for a long time at Neil Squire Society, but this Makers Making Change work really is only going to be successful by people that choose to put their hands up and willing to help someone in their community. So thank you in advance to everyone for taking the time to listen and offering their time to help make the lives of people with disabilities a little bit better.
You and I have been listening to Chad Lehman, Director of Development for Canada's Neil Squire Society and co-founder of Makers Making Change, Canada's first organization to match makers up with people with disabilities to collaborate on developing new assistive technologies. You'll find more information on Makers Making Change on their website, makersmakingchange.com. That's makersmakingchange.com. And, as Chad offered before, if you'd like to host a Makers Making Change lip sync specific build in your community, he'll cover the components of the first 5 lip syncs you create. You can email him for more information. That email once again, chadl@makersmakingchange.com. And one more thing here, how about it? Do you, as a maker and creative person, have an idea for designing something that might help Jared communicate independently? Now, Jared, you recall, is in the advanced stages of MS and can communicate by moving his eyebrow. If we can design LED eyelashes and devices that turn a flight of stairs into a keyboard, a communication device for him ought to be within reach. And that concludes this edition of Over Coffee. Thank you for listening. Subscribe to Over Coffee at twomaverix.com. That's two, T-W-O, Mavericks, M-A-V-E-R-I-X, twomaverix.com. And you can contact us at twomaverix@gmail.com. The music you're hearing is royalty-free production music provided by Pond5 at pond5.com. I'm Dot Cannon. Here's wishing you a cappuccino day.